Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, December 5th, 2025. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Decatur, Downtown Christmas Walk. We've got shopping to do. Walk draws shoppers as businesses seek to rebound from winter punch. Local small businesses hit a rough patch at the beginning of the holiday season with the arrival of snow and low temperatures. However, Jacqueline Osborne and Kim Schaefer weren't going to let the weather stop them from their annual shopping excursion. "We do this every year," Osborne said, while shopping at downtown Decatur's All Things Beautiful. "We enjoy the atmosphere, being around people. It's a joyful time." "And we've got shopping to do," Schaefer said. Small Business Saturday was met with nearly a foot of snow, preventing many customers from shopping at their favorite local shops and encouraging the same stores to close early. "It's one of those things that you hope doesn't happen, but when it does, you can't imagine the weather. You can't change the weather," said Mary Kate Whitley, manager for Giggles on Merchant Street. Whitley and other shop owners and managers were hoping for a second chance to recuperate any losses during the downtown Christmas walk on Wednesday. Although the temperatures were below freezing and snow and ice still covered areas, the stores were ready for customers. "We can't let it break the spirit of the holidays," Whitley said. "You've got to keep moving on." A few of the small shops planned to repeat the sales on Saturday that they missed out on last weekend. "I'm hoping it will be busy Saturday downtown," said Tournesol owner Ann Rafferty. "Other than being cold, the weather should be okay. Many of the store owners say the holiday business has been going well, despite the early onslaught of winter. Our community and surrounding communities that come over to shop, they understand that, and they want to try to spend some money locally," Rafferty said. "We get supported a lot." "That's the way our customers have been for 26 years," said Tournesol's former owner, Kim McSherry. They have supported us because they recognize that we want the downtown to continue to thrive." Welcoming Tournesol's customers is Sam, the shop cat, a special feature not often seen at large department stores. "And you're not going to get the customer service at Walmart or the big stores," McSherry said. "The Brass Horn has had a successful season so far," said Josh Hendricks, head of marketing and sales. "It's 90% Christmas gifts," he said. "We still get a few people buying for themselves, but primarily we do a lot of gift wrapping." The men's clothing store also helps their customers get ready for holiday parties, from sport coats to sweaters and everything in between, Zach Stroud said. "And a lot of red sweater requests," Hendricks said. "Shopping for oneself can be part of the festivities as well. Staff at Dell's Popcorn on Merchant Street often watch people walk by and then stop for the smells and look inside. Even if they window shop closer to Christmas, they know what they want to get," said Shania Griffin, Dell's closing manager. Small businesses are known for their unique products, with nostalgic candy and popcorn as part of the merchandise. "Dell's is ideal for stocking stuffers," she pointed out, "and we love to see that." Cheryl Threewitt is the owner of All Things Beautiful. She said she was concerned about missing out on Small Business Saturday. "A slow start to the downtown Christmas walk only added to her worries. I'm definitely concerned about how the season's going to go," she said, "but there's nothing I can do about that. I've done all I can." The winter weather can prevent customers from visiting small businesses that are reliant on foot traffic, Threewitt said, "but people are out." Although the small shops can help finish up the Christmas list, many customers are shopping for themselves. "A lot of time I buy things I like," Osborne said, "because this is a good time for those. And it's so festive this time of year," Schaefer added. And the photo on page A3 here shows owner Cheryl Threewitt making a sale at All Things Beautiful during the annual Downtown Decatur Christmas Walk. And you see her behind the counter accepting some cash for the purchase. And the photo on page one, if I can get back to it here, shows Lori Napoli, Jamie Reed, and Diana Nelson test out the snow in seconds, fake snow, at Giggles during the annual Downtown Decatur Walk on Wednesday, December 3rd. And the three women are kind of hovering around the counter, and there's a bowl of fake snow, and Diana Nelson has her fingers in the fake snow. The others are waiting to find out what it feels like. And there's the shop seems to be full of people. There are people behind her shopping and coming to the counter, and we see what's the decor of the shop and the goods that they're selling. And then there's another inset picture, a close-up of Kylie Hellenkamp gift wrapping jewelry at Brass Horn 2 during the annual Downtown Decatur Christmas Walk on Wednesday, December 3rd. And it's a tiny package with plaid green and white, green, white, and red Christmas wrap and a bright green bow. Also on the front page, Decatur Council, city to pay $200,000 more to railroad, expenditure needed to keep Brush College project on track. Anxious to keep the more than $72 million Brush College grade separation road project on track and chugging ahead, the Decatur City Council is putting its hand in its pocket to scrape up an additional $200,000 to hand over to the Illinois Central Railroad Company. Council members voted 7-0 to approve a resolution to pay the cash, which will be pulled from the city's state motor fuel tax funds. Here's the background. Work began on the Mammoth Project to elevate traffic over Ferries Parkway and railroad tracks in October of 2023 and is scheduled to be finished by the end of 2026. As part of the project, the City of Decatur struck agreements with the Norfolk Southern Railway Company and the Illinois Central to reimburse the railroads for costs of work they have to do as part of the construction process. Interim City Manager Melissa Hahn told the council at its Monday meeting that the bill from Illinois Central has been estimated at $776,481. But the costs overran the estimates and hit the buffers. In November, the Illinois Central exceeded their estimated expenditure, Hahn said in a written report. The city is struggling to get the Illinois Central to provide an updated estimate in order to keep the railroad on track and avoid delays while we wait for a firmer number. It is proposed to increase the state MFT, motor fuel tax, appropriation for the Illinois Central agreement by $200,000. Hahn said that so far all previous payments have been reimbursed by the Illinois Commerce Commission, which oversees the railroads. The funding is capped at $776,481, Hahn told the council. Additional reimbursement may be available if there's funding left over at the end of the project. The council also voted to spend another $65,000 and take the opportunity offered by the Brush College project to do some much-needed repairs to Ferries Parkway. In a separate report, Hahn told the council that Ferries Parkway is in dire need of concrete patching outside of the work related to Brush College construction. She said it's an area that is normally difficult to get that kind of repair done because of the heavy railroad and street traffic. But with Brush College contractor William Charles Construction already working in the area, it would be a lot easier to pay them to go ahead to do the additional Ferries Parkway patching. That would also mean handing them a no-bid contract, which isn't the council's standard practice, but the city manager said it would avoid the complications of trying to bring in another contractor in the middle of William Charles's work zone. And the prices proposed by William Charles are very competitive and lower than those currently being done under the current street project, she told the council. The actual cost of the work is $57,725, with the additional $7,275 project contingency allowance tacked on to make a final total of $65,000. In local and state news on page A2, Moultrie County. Crews put training to test in fire at Sullivan Marina Restaurant. Sullivan fire crews have pre-planned how they would attack a fire at the Lake Shelbyville Marina several times. They put those plans into action early Thursday morning when they were called out at approximately 12:30 a.m. To a blaze at Floating North End Pub and Grill. But we didn't take into the fact that everything would be ice-covered like it was, Sullivan Fire Chief Chris Wright said. Although the structure isn't located on the main land, the crew was able to tackle the fire using various tools and equipment. The water supply was set up at the top of the nearby hill. The crews were also able to enter through the docks. Then we had to hand carry all the tools and everything else, Wright said. Establishing water went pretty well given the obstacles we had. The Sullivan fire crew was assisted by Bethany, Lovington, Windsor, and Findlay fire departments. Wright said that there were no injuries reported. The cause of the fire is under investigation by the Office of the Illinois State Fire Marshal. Initial reports indicate none of the boats still docked at the marina were damaged. John Fahey, owner of the Sullivan Marina and campground, expressed appreciation to the crews that showed up in freezing conditions to contain the fire. Early indications are the structure will need to be rebuilt. The restaurant is a floating restaurant down in the water, he said. It's kind of a mess right now, he said. The family has owned the property for 30 years. Fahey hopes the business will be open again by the spring. We will make every effort, he said. We're confident we'll have it up and running, he said. And there's a photo of it. The North End Pub and Grill, located at the Sullivan Marina and Campground, was damaged by an overnight fire. Campground owners expect new structure will need to be built and hope it will be ready for next summer. And it's a picture of it, the floating, it's on a near a dock and down the hill from what looks like a highway. And you can see there's damage at one end. The roof is looks like it had fire coming out through it. And it looks... the picture kind of makes it look very cold with the snow in the background, the snow and the water is not ice, but it's, you know, it's frigid water. Macon County courts, driving drunk, death charge dropped in collision, child's death. Suspect Hassan J. Woods now charged with aggravated DUI. Alleged drunk driver Hassan J. Woods is no longer facing a charge that said his driving caused the death of 12-year-old Kavari Drisdell. In a news release Wednesday, Macon County State's Attorney Diane Khoury said a thorough review of the evidence dictated that particular charge had to be dismissed. This case is especially heartbreaking because it involves the death of a child, Khoury said. After a thorough review of the crash reconstruction, the video footage and witness statements, the evidence does not support that Mr. Woods' intoxication was the proximate cause of the child's death. In all cases, the Macon County State's Attorney's Office can only do what the law allows. In this specific case, the law and ethical obligations dictate the dismissal of count one, aggravated driving under the influence causing death. Khoury said her office was now going ahead with a second charge against Woods of aggravated driving under the influence with no valid insurance. He's pleading not guilty. Kavari suffered fatal injuries around 5 p.m. June 15th at the intersection of North Van Dyke and West King Streets after a collision between his bicycle and the 45-year-old defendant's car. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department described Woods as having glassy, bloodshot eyes and slow, slurred speech. While being questioned by police after the collision, he failed field sobriety tests and gave a breath sample that showed him to be too drunk to legally drive. Curry said tremendous effort has been made to explore every aspect of the case against Woods. The Macon County State's Attorney's Office enlisted the help of Illinois State Police and the Illinois State's Attorney's Appellate Prosecutor's Office to ensure that no stone was left unturned, she added. Curry said both the state police and the appellate prosecutor had backed her charging decision. Our hearts remain with the child's family and all who mourn this tragic loss, she said. Woods had been due to face a jury trial December 15th, but that was scrubbed Wednesday at the Macon County Circuit Court hearing, at which the aggravated DUI causing death charge was dismissed by Judge Jeffrey Giesler. Woods is now due back in court for a pretrial hearing February 5th on his remaining charge. The defendant has been jailed in the case, but was also granted pretrial release Wednesday. Jake Rademacher's Brothers After War Coming to Brothers After War Coming to Decatur. Brothers After War, a documentary by Decatur native Jake Rademacher, will be shown from noon to 4 p.m. at the AMC Classic 10 at 2360 South Mount Zion Road on Saturday, December 13th. The free movie and lunch will include a seminar with Rademacher. Space is limited and reservations are required. Visit Brothers After War to reserve your seat. Rademacher reunites with his brothers, Decatur natives LTC Isaac Rademacher and MSG Joseph Rademacher, and the elite soldiers and Marines he embedded with during the Iraq War. Intercutting footage past and present, he leads an insightful, humorous, and moving journey as service members explore loss, meaning, and hope on their path from warfighter to veteran. And then there's a poster for the war. It says, Brothers After War. And it shows three people in silhouette at the top of the poster, and then three people in the forefront with their pictures, and then maybe the same people in the background. Again, that is Saturday, December 13th, from noon to 4 p.m. at the AMC Classic 10, 2360 South Mount Zion Road. Chicago. Historic music box looks to add third screen. Times have been tough for movie exhibitors thanks to the 1-2 punch of streaming and pandemic, but Chicago's Music Box Theater is going strong regardless. The historic Art House Cinema on Tuesday announced the addition of a new 100-seat third screen at its Southport Avenue location, as well as the purchase of another historic venue, in the Midwest with the Heights Theater in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Locally, the new theater space is being carved out of two adjacent storefronts, paid for by the Music Box's owners as well as a community development grant from the City of Chicago. The additional venue will create more flexibility for festivals, extended runs, and filmmaker events. The space is expected to open in summer 2026, and it comes on the heels of some improvements made to the existing theaters last year, with the installation of new, more comfortable seating. In Minneapolis, the Heights Theater is a renowned 1926 atmospheric movie palace, featuring original plasterwork, crystal chandeliers, and its signature mighty Wurlitzer organ, according to a statement. Its programming history has much in common with that of the Music Box, with first-run showings alongside older films, as well as the ability to screen 70-millimeter prints. So both the historic nature of the venue and its focus will be familiar territory for the new owners. The theater will close briefly after its annual New Year's Day screening of Holiday Inn and reopen January 9th with Father, Mother, Sister, Brother, the new comedy from director Jim Jarmusch, starring Cate Blanchett. Per the announcement, the Music Box intends to maintain annual traditions, including its White Christmas screenings, its Celebration of Cinema Festival, a film noir series, and an Alfred Hitchcock series, while adding some new programming, late-night screenings on the weekends and Saturday morning cinema geared toward kids. So it has a picture here of the Music Box Theater's marquee, and it's got the Music Box title, and then in the Broadway kind of lights, Oppenheimer in 70 millimeter now playing. Chicago immigration, residents ordered to vacate apartments. Court orders move after ICE raided in September. This is from the Chicago Tribune. On a freezing Tuesday morning after Chicago's snowiest November day on record, residents of a building that made international headlines after a federal immigration raid earlier this year decried a recent court-ordered mandate to vacate their homes at 7500 South Shore Drive. The five-story apartment building with its decrepit infrastructure and scarce electricity was the site of a late-night raid in September that was among the most infamous moments in President Donald Trump's Operation Midway Blitz. Now its residents, who last month formed the South Shore Tenants Union, face the possibility of being thrown out of their homes within days. The Circuit Court of Cook County granted an order on November 24th from Wells Fargo Bank to have residents at 7500 South Shore Drive to vacate by December 5th for those with valid leases, and all other occupants were instructed to leave by December 12th of this year. The South Shore Tenants Union, supported by the Metropolitan Tenants Organization and Southside Together, said that they were blindsided by the court order, which was granted without tenant input and leaves members scrambling to find housing in bitterly cold weather. "This is my community, and I should not be forced out, especially at a time like this when it's literally freezing outside," said Treverius Ivy. The two-year resident said he saw the note ordering residents to vacate posted on a wall the day before Thanksgiving. Ivy's apartment had no electricity since around mid-November, and the food in his fridge was rotting, he told the Tribune. We still don't got no heat, no electricity. My light is out. I have to stay with relatives just because it's too cold for me to stay here," Ivy said at the news conference. Ivy said he's not been offered any relocation assistance to date. The union is asking for $7,500 in relocation assistance provided 30 days before the scheduled move-out and paid to the building's management from Freedman Communities, the City of Chicago, Cook County, or the State of Illinois. The union also asked Freedman Communities to take immediate steps to repair the building's heat, electricity, elevator, and sewage, among other maintenance, as well as hire 24-hour security. According to the union, the building has 37 known occupants and several wheelchair users who are unable to move since the elevators don't work. Whether the judge thinks the building is safe or not, it's less safe for people to be homeless in the snow on the holidays, Jonah Carr said. A housing organizer. Freedman Communities was recently appointed manager of the apartment building after a legal dispute between lender Wells Fargo and Trinity Flood, the owner of the building property, and the city has proposed a move-out by December 12th, according to earlier Tribune reporting. A note posted on the building wall stated that representatives from Freedman Real Estate would be at the property answering questions and providing additional move-out and relocation support between December 1st and December 5th. Asked about the tenants' demands Tuesday, Mayor Brandon Johnson said his administration has been working with these tenants for some time. He added that the city could find dignified housing for residents using Chicago's Housing Authority vouchers and keep residents safe before the move-out. My administration is working overtime with the organizers of these tenants to ensure that they have a place of comfort and place that they can afford and feel good about, he said. Johnson did not take a clear stance on the December 12th deadline. Instead, he promised to work with expediency to relocate residents. If there's an opportunity to work with the court to provide maximum time for comfort and placement, of course, we'll explore that, he said. Inside the 130-unit apartment building, a dog and a cat roamed the complex, moving through half-open doors and pools of water on hallway floors. These same floors were trampled by immigration agents on September 30th when the South Shore apartment building became the center of a militarized raid that left many residents traumatized. That day, agents smashed windows, broke down doors, and zip-tied hands of residents in a controversial middle-of-the-night operation. The federal government said it was searching for Trende Aragua gang members. A federal judge has ordered the release of at least six Venezuelans arrested that night amid allegations that their detainment violated a consent decree limiting warrantless detainments. Those six individuals have little to no criminal history and no apparent ties to any gang. They remain in custody pending the federal government's appeal. The Tribune reported exclusively in October that no public criminal charges have been filed against anyone in connection with the raid. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Tuesday called the building's raid abominable and said supporting the tenants was a city issue as opposed to a state one. This is a local endeavor that has obviously state importance and national importance in some ways, and so we'll continue to monitor that and be responsive to the city as it needs assistance in helping those tenants, Pritzker said. The tenants of that building are deserving of attention for the concerns that they have. Amid the snow on Tuesday, shivering unionizers and residents, some wrapped in blankets, interrupted each other and chanted, "That ain't right," in show of support. Meanwhile, a truck with the logo Dogs Vacant Property Security, a firm that provides door and window guards for vacant property, unloaded what appeared to be a whiteboard and took it into the building. Resident Samantha Stamps wept. "I have never been through nothing like this in my life," Stamps said in between tears. "This is bad," she said. "I can't even have my grandkids over. And they were here with me every weekend." And the photo shows a resident, Travarius Ivy, leads the media through the apartment building at 7500 South Shore Drive in Chicago on December 2nd, 2025. And it's a bleak hallway. It's a bleak, very bleak, gray hallway in an old apartment building. That's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, December 5th, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned